Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to yet another edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, and it's awesome to have you with us. Get to share another incredible triathlete story today here on the podcast. And as always, if you haven't left us a review or a rating yet, we'd really appreciate it. If you enjoy the podcast as much as I enjoy putting them together for you, if you wouldn't mind taking just a couple of minutes, literally it's 2 minutes out of your life, to leave us a rating, a review, it just really helps us get in front of more and more triathletes just like you from around the globe. And we want to try and help as many as we can here at the Kona Edge. Today we're going to touch base with, like I said, a phenomenal athlete. Kevin Portman joins us today. But before we get into Kevin's story, let's take a look at our coach's corner. It's time for the coach's corner, and our coach in the spotlight today is Frank Soul of Soul Swim Solutions. If you are looking for some help with your swim stroke, I can tell you Frank is the man. He has over 20 years experience as a premier swim tactician and triathlon coach for endurance athletes. He uses technique-driven swim coaching in working with pro triathletes, Kona qualifiers and age groupers, and easily adapts to an athlete's talents, personality and limitations. He recognizes your abilities to maximize your swimming potential by utilizing the essential elements in his ebook, The 10 B's of Triathlon Swimming. It's definitely worthwhile checking that out. Frank is a USA T Level 2 triathlon coach, ASCA Level 3 swim coach, US Masters swim coach, certified in World Open Water Swimming Association coaching, AFPA certified personal trainer, functional movement screening certified exercise professional, and certified nutrition and wellness coach. Consultant. Soul Swim Solutions offers a variety of online coaching services, including video stroke analysis with written workouts and drills to improve your swim performance and exceed your race day goals. So if the swim is your big concern, I'm telling you now, Frank Soul is your guy. Go check him out. The website to get to is soulswimsolutions.com. If you want to link directly through from the Kona Edge, all you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. And you can get all the details you need there about Frank Soul. Well, we head to California now, to Oceanside, on the Kona Edge, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Kevin Portman onto the podcast. Kevin, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I know it's late for you, so thanks very much for being willing to talk to me that late.
No, it's all good. I'm a night owl at the best of times, so can't complain. It's I love doing these things too. So and I understand, obviously, with time zones, it's pretty difficult to catch up, particularly if you're on the west coast of the States. But chuffed to have you on. Tell me about the triathlon scene in Oceanside. We were talking before we started recording. Climate wise, it sounds like the perfect place to live and train.
Yeah, you can't complain, really. I mean, weather-wise, it's nice and sunny all year round. It never really dips below 50 degrees in the winter. And it never goes higher than, I'd say, mid-70s here on the coast in the summer. If you want to get some heat training, you can ride inland and you can get some nice and warm weather. But for the most part, it's pretty close to perfect training conditions here.
I was gonna say, that sounds horrible. I don't know how you cope.
It's terrible. Don't move here. It's horrible.
That's what I always say to people about where I live in Cape Town. It's the weather, it does get a bit windy, does get a bit wet, but it's a magnificent place to live, and I just tell people it's horrible. You would hate it here. You wouldn't want to live here. So it sounds about the same in Oceanside, I guess.
Probably without as much rain. If we have, we've had a wet winter this year, but we moved out here February of last year, and I think we had 3 or 4 days of rain throughout the entire year. So now, I mean, if you're into swimming, biking, and running, it's really hard to beat, I think.
It sounds
you
like
don't
it.
Get the altitude, but you get the perfect weather all year round.
It sounds like it. Kevin, tell me a little bit about the triathlon scene in Oceanside. Is it pretty big?
It is, yeah. You do have a few pros that train here. Luke McKenzie is one of them. Mike Twesleek, the German pro as well, is around here, and a few more. You do have some ITU folks as well. But in general, the triathlon theme is you know, it's very competitive. Even at the age group level, you have very, very strong athletes. So it's easy to find people to train with if you train with people on a day-to-day basis.
Let's take a step back to a young Kevin Portman. Tell me a little bit about you growing up sport-wise. Have you always been active?
Yes, born and raised in France. So I was born and raised in the Alps. So skiing is obviously a sport that comes to mind. I was put on skis when I was 2 or 3. And it was easy for me because my parents lived about 5 to 10 minute drive from 3 to 4 different ski resorts. So it was easy for them to drop us off at the ski resort during the day and pick us up at night. So I grew up skiing and then playing table tennis for 6-7 seasons. And that was a lot of fun. I think table tennis is underrated. It's a very, very fun sport. And I wanted to do a team sport as well, so I played soccer. Soccer being huge in France. I played for 4 or 5 years as well before moving to the States. I'm very, very active. Anything sport-related I enjoy doing, so.
Tell me about the table tennis. People think table tennis, how hard can that be? But it's pretty physically demanding. I've played a bit messing around, nothing serious, but you can work up a pretty good sweat in a game of table tennis.
I'm going to raise some eyebrows if people listen to this podcast. But yes, table tennis is underrated. It's, you know, short movements, very dynamic. It's a good cardio exercise, actually. And I recall doing those preseason training camps and being completely spent after each day. I think table tennis is one of the sports where people don't consider it a sport, but when you actually get involved in it and train competitively, you get a good workout out of it. So, I just wish that it was a little bigger here in the States.
And it's good fun to play as well. Were you pretty good at it?
Yeah, decent enough to play at a national level in France and picked up a few sponsors here and there. And we did some tournaments in Germany and Switzerland and had a training camp in Germany. So, you definitely can get a lot out of playing table tennis. If you play in a team, it's a team sport. And, it's a mental game as well, obviously, is a physical game to some extent. So, it's fun. It's indoors, though. You don't get the opportunity to be outdoors and breathe fresh air. So that's maybe the only downside that I can think of when I think of table tennis. But definitely underrated, definitely a lot of fun to play ping pong, as some people would call it.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about your introduction into triathlon. Where did your interest in that in the sport come from?
So my really close friend in New York, he texted me on a Thursday telling me, hey, I'm doing this sprint triathlon on Saturday. Are you interested in coming? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And I just bought a bike like 2 months before that. So I was excited to actually get to ride my bike because, you know, it's kind of hard to ride your bike in New York City and on a safe road. So we went to that triathlon thing knowing nothing about swimming, biking, and running all at once. And I remember the race organizer telling us that there was that very sharp turn at the bottom of a very steep downhill, essentially that just sends you straight back up to the hill, telling us, you know, just slow down. You'll see people warning you, like, slow down. Don't be that guy. Just slow yourself down. And, of course, I was that guy who just didn't really listen. And I didn't make the turn. So I ended up getting some road rash, but it was a blast. It was a blast just, you know, crossing the finish and getting your medal and cookies and pizza and drinks. It was a lot of fun just hanging out by the lake. I was hooked. I didn't do that many triathlons after that first year. I think when I really got the bug was when I raced the New York City Triathlon the following year, and I raised funds for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And I did pretty okay that day without really putting too much effort into my training. So I thought to myself that if I was a little more serious about the sport, I wanted to see where that would take me. So a good friend of mine invited me to connect with his coach. And I mean, it, to me, it was like, okay, I'm going to work with this coach. So I had my first year working with a coach and, you know, things just snowballed really quickly. I bought a tri bike and, decided to work with another coach, the following year, at the end of 2013. And from that point on, I've been working with the same coach. He took me to Kona twice, to 70.3 Worlds and Mont Tremblant. And most recently took me to, clinch my pro card and win Coeur d'Alene. So, yeah, it's been a very good, past 4 years going into my fifth year in a triathlon.
It sounds like it. Tell me about that moment where you've decided, you know what, I want to take this thing seriously. And that conversation with the first coach. I think a lot of people think, well, you know what, I'm okay. I don't really need a coach. But tell me your thinking. And you had obviously been coached table tennis. You've been coached at football. So you knew the benefit of having a coach. Tell me about that conversation.
Yeah, there's just so much going on in two triathlon. It doesn't take a lot to realize that, you know, just balancing the swimming, biking and running and recovery aspect of training for a triathlon is a lot to take on, especially if you don't know anything about the sport. And I usually to be 100% all in when I do things. So it only made sense to me to talk to a coach. That was the only coach that I talked to. I didn't really do my research on, you know, who I should talk to and interview them. Essentially, I was sold before talking to the guy. That was my mindset, is I'm going to go in and do as he says. And it was really good. He was a little more focused on the cycling part, which is good because it's my favorite of the three. But it was too much focused on cycling. And I realized as my first year went on that I wasn't swimming enough or I wasn't running enough. So, you know, starting to interviewing different coaches and trying to understand their philosophy, how they approach the coaching, how they approach the different sports. And, it made sense to me to part ways with my coach because he didn't seem to be willing to, you know, spend more time in the pool or spend more time running. For him, the bike was, because it's obviously the longest of the three, it was what was important to him. So, yeah, I mean, it was, to me, it just made sense. Now, there's so much that we don't know, and there's a reason why people study the sport and become coaches and build experience. That it just made sense for me to reach out to a coach and work with a coach. And quite frankly, it's just, there's just so much to take into account. And just, you know, balancing the three plus recovery is just so much that even with the little experience that I have now, I would not consider doing it myself because I also need the accountability to someone else as well. If I were to coach myself, then if I were to skip one workout, I'll be like, well, I'll just catch up tomorrow. And I wouldn't have that sense of accountability to someone else, if that makes sense. Mm.
Are you one of those guys that if it's on the training program, it has to get done come hell or high water?
Yeah, because I especially with my coach, Kevin Dennehy, he always gets me race ready for every single race that I do. He gets me race ready all the time. So, we build up trust that way. And if he's prescribing a workout, then, yeah, it had to be done. I'm one of those who would do everything, you know, he or she can to just get the work in, especially even if I have to wake up at 4 a.m. in the morning or get the bike in at 10 o'clock at night, I would do it.
Why Ironman as a distance? Why have you chosen to go there? I mean, I don't know how long a competitive match of table tennis takes, or I mean, a soccer game takes 90 minutes. Why Ironman? It's a lot longer.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're putting yourself out there to swim, bike, run, and if you're paying that much money, you may as well just go, you know, for the whole day. there are a few reasons. Is, you know, the sport is so competitive right now that, you know, people coming with a Olympic background, they're just so much faster than me in the water and running. I could compete with those guys on the bike because I like to think that the bike is my strongest, but swimming and running, I already had a disadvantage. So, obviously Ironman, you're out there 412 miles on the bike, and so I could make up ground on those guys. And just the love of the endurance aspect of the sport. My dad was a big into mountain biking, and I've always done, you know, cycling a little bit, and seen my uncle, who was also a cyclist, seeing them going out there for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. So it just made sense. And the appeal of the Ironman, you know, watching videos of people crossing the finish, and obviously getting myself familiar with Kona, I wanted to go there. So Ironman just naturally made sense to me.
Let's talk about the set and the goal when you've got into your first Ironman. Did you go? When did Kona get onto the radar? Was it from the start that was the goal? You're going to do what it takes, or what was your experience in the sport as a whole before your first Kona?
No, it wasn't the goal in my first Ironman. In fact, I didn't want to jump into the Ironman distance too soon. I think there's just so much that, you know, my body needs to get used to in the shorter distances before jumping into Ironman. To me, it didn't really make sense to jump straight into Ironman. I didn't want to burn bridges. I didn't want to burn myself out. So I did a lot of 70.3s and Olympic races and sprint races to really get myself comfortable with the whole swim, bike, run ordeal. And in 2014 is when I did my first Ironman in Zurich. And I chose Zurich because my family, being from Evian, it was a quick drive for them to come to see me. And I wanted them to experience the Ironman event as well. And I beat my expectation by large, and I was very surprised. I had a great day there.
How did you go in that first one? And it's funny you say that, because I was in Zurich in 2014 at that race as well, and I'm putting money on it. Yours was a lot quicker than mine.
expectations with my coach, we looked at the times, we looked at, you know, my bike and my run splits, and I told him, I was like, you know, like my stretch goal would be close to sub 10 hours, and he, you know, he said, yeah, I think you can do it. If you have a great day, I think if you're able to put it together, then you'll be fine, but you have to be able to pace yourself on the bike, because he knows that the bike being my strongest, I have a hard time pacing myself because I just want to go out there and hammer and thrash my legs. But I was able to pace myself, you know, thanks bar meters for that. And I clocked in at 9:39 on that first race, and I was very, very pleasantly surprised, like, oh, this is cool. And then and a friend of mine did Ironman, I think, Maryland later that year, and actually won the race. And he qualified for Kona. I was like, well, I want to go to Kona too. Like, I want to be there. So my coach, we talked about which races we should, you know, consider, and can we actually qualify for it? But I told him, I was like, no, we have to do everything we can to get me race ready and competitive for Kona. Not knowing what the competition would be, but I wanted to put everything under my control, so that I would show up to a race ready to compete and potentially clinch the slot for Kona. So, yeah, it started with 70.3s, and then Zurich was a good first experience. I think it probably would have been different if the experience wasn't that good. But, yeah, things worked out for me.
Yeah, I don't think if that was my first one, I don't think I would have gone back, if I have to be honest. But thankfully, it wasn't my first. So, and then the decision to turn pro and get your card to race as a professional, was it a big decision? What was the thinking behind that? And the reason I ask is because we've got a lot of age groupers who are pretty good, but the step up's pretty big from age group to pro. Tell me a little bit about the thinking there.
Yeah, it definitely was a tough decision, a lot tougher on me than it was on my wife, because, you know, you're in a spot where you're doing pretty okay at an age group level, and you're wondering what it's like to race as a pro. But racing as a pro, again, because my mentality is if you do something, you do it 100% or 150%. Didn't really make sense to race as a pro while you have a full-time job. And my wife told me one day, I was like, well, you're not getting any younger. So you may as well just, you know, give it a shot for 2 to 3 seasons and see how it goes. If you see improvement, then we'll reassess. And that was tough because I enjoyed my job and it paid well. I'm not going to lie, it paid really well. So going from having a good financial stability to relying only one paycheck was a difficult notion, but we pulled the trigger in February of this year, mid-February of this year, and so far so good. I mean, I always, you know, think to myself, what the hell am I doing? Because financially sometimes it's just a little difficult. You can buy all those gadgets and that you used to buy, but yeah, no, the first 4 races as a pro have been have gone better than I expected. So so far so good, really. But it is a very tough decision to make. Yeah.
And you've got an Ironman win in your rookie season. That's nothing to scoff at. You must be pretty proud of it.
I won Ironman Coeur d'Alene in 2016 as an age trooper because there wasn't a pro field there. To date, in my first pro season, I PR'd at 3:52 last weekend in Calgary. So yeah, no, I think it's going well so far. We'll see where that takes me, but it's so fast. And I was talking to my wife about the race, and the swim didn't go as planned for me, and just the room for error is so thin and so slim that if something goes wrong, it just messes up your entire race and your entire plan. So definitely a big step up from the age group world, but it's good. It's interesting, you know, getting my ass kicked.
what's been the biggest surprise in that jump to you? I mean, obviously you had thought about it and you had considered all the options, but what for you has surprised you in that jump?
I think it's the intensity of my training. Volume wise, it's, you know, I'm training for 70.3 and it's about the Ironman volume that I did last year when I was working full time. But the intensity is such that I haven't found the right balance between training and recovering. And I find myself tired a lot, constantly tired. So I have yet to, you know, try to adjust to that, because if I want to jump back into the Ironman training, then I can't even imagine going into that, not being able to recover, properly. So I think from a training perspective, it's the, intensity of the day to day, training load. I think from a race perspective, I expected that level and the gap. The gap is huge. I'm not going to lie. The gap is big. But, you know, you got to realize that you're racing people that have 15 plus years of experience at the top level. You know, the Kinley of this world and the Ferdino of this world didn't get there by chance. You know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hours put in. So it's hard to compete with those guys. But, you know, hard work and commitment, we'll see where that's going to take me in 2 to 3 seasons. And we'll just reassess there then. And yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I think the gap, I expected it to be big. I think if you go in thinking that you're going to be competitive from a grouper to into the pro field, it's a little presumptuous. You need to be willing to accept that you'll be at the bottom of the pack. And that's fine. It's part of the experience, part of the learning experience, learning curve.
It must be tough, though, coming from a very competitive age group background, where you'll go to a race and there's a good chance you're going to be on the top step of the podium, and you get used to that feeling of winning and believing you're good enough, and then you get thrown in the deep end with the pros, and it's not that easy. Is that something you've struggled with?
Yeah, I mean, I can't deny it, yeah. But that's because I'm a competitor at heart. So obviously when you go from getting on the podium at some races to just, you know, being a normal pro, back of the pack pro, yeah, it's difficult. Mentally it's difficult. But I also knew going in that, you know, the next 2 to 3 seasons will, you know, it's just an adjusting period for me. And then if I see that I can make progress, then we'll continue. And then if not, then going back to your age group it's nothing bad about it. So yeah, it's definitely mentally challenging. but the learning experience is fantastic. Having the opportunity to toe in the line with the likes of Kenley and just seeing them just crushing it, it's very inspiring. I was in Calgary and Josh Amberger just destroyed the race completely, and seeing him run it's very inspiring. Hopefully one day I can get a little closer to his level, but it's cool. It's a good learning experience so far.
Let's talk Kona. What is, in your mind, what's the secret as an age grouper to qualifying to race on the Big Island?
Don't take it to qualify for Kona or to race Kona.
To qualify, to get the qualifying spot.
There's so many strong age groupers out there, and age groupers that could race pro level just fine. And you never know who shows up at an Ironman race. So to me, the biggest lesson was, go out and do your race and have fun, but have the goal of trying to qualify for Kona, but don't have the expectation that you're going to qualify. Don't be too cocky about your abilities to qualify for Kona. You just never know who's going to show up at a race. And there's just so much that can go wrong during the race. If you mess up your nutrition, then you screw up your entire race. I think being humble, going into the race, knowing that you've done the work and you're race ready, but respect your competition, to me, is one key lesson that I learned. Not that I didn't respect the competition, but I see it was other people who go in are very, very confident about their abilities, and sometimes you sort of a little too much. Trust the process, trust your training, and see how the day goes, but there is nothing wrong about missing a Kona slot. If you're third in your age group and there are only two Kona slots, then that means two people were a lot stronger than you on the day, but doesn't mean that you're not Kona worthy. So, I think that's in the six Ironman or seven Ironman that I did, is I always try to respect my competition, because there are some really fast people out there, very, very strong people out there.
How much of it is belief, believing that you're good enough? Yes, you've done the work, you've done the miles in training, and on the day, just having the – I know you say not going in too cocky, but being confident enough, knowing that you are good enough to mix it up with the best on the day.
It's huge. To me, especially on the run portion, because, the swim and the run are my weakest by far. So if I manage to get in out of T2 in a good position and fresh enough to do the run, then to me, it's my head that takes over. And especially in Coeur d'Alene, was an interesting race because I took the lead at mile 12, which is where I DNF'd at Whistler. So as soon as I took the lead at Coeur d'Alene, my mindset was so focused on the race and so focused on not letting it go. And I would have done anything possible. Even if someone was coming down, chasing me down, I would have done everything that I could have to stay in the lead or stay close to the lead. If negative thoughts will come during the race, and highs and lows, and you probably have more lows than highs, but if you're able to shrug the lows and think about you put yourself into a situation that brings positivity, then I think it goes a long way, especially for an Ironman. When you're at mile 20 on the race, there's just so much more to cover. 6 miles, it's such a long distance after like 8-9 hours out there. So belief is huge. And that's something that I've been struggling with, mental, confidence. That's something that my wife has been like really trying to get me to work on. At some point it's all mental, and I can do a lot more. I can do a lot better on that end, but it'll come with time.
It's interesting you say that, because we obviously train our bodies physically to take on the challenge. What are some of the things you're doing to make yourself mentally stronger right now that sort of to get your head in that game and in that space?
A few things. So we started meditating. So my wife is starting to impose meditation on me, which is good. Clear up your headspace. I started to read books as well about people and successes and how they actually achieve their success and how they actually, you know, everybody faces lows and highs and how they actually overcome the lows. And so I try to feed my brain with like positive experiences and stories that I read. And when it comes to training, when I start struggling on the run or on the bike, I really try to project myself into a race situation where I'm in the front and I'm leading the race, or maybe I'm running side by side with Stanley. I try and put myself in a mental scenario where things are great, things are going well. And so I don't think about the physical pain that I'm going through. That's what I tend to do. And obviously I try to shut down the negativity that, you know, you can get. I try not to spend too much time on social media, the race, the week before the race, and just try to be in my own world of positive thinking. So if that helps, if that answers the question, that's what I try to do. It's a work in progress, though. You constantly have to work on that mental aspect, at least for me, because that's something that I'm lacking at the moment.
What's the biggest life lesson that Ironman has taught you?
It's a very good question. I'd say, roll with the punches is probably what Ironman taught me. And I mean, the perfect example was my DNF at Whistler. I had a very good training leading up to the race and I felt really strong. And I always, 10 days before the race, I always start questioning myself. And that almost all the good that I've done in my training block is just the power of the mind, and negativity can just erase most of your good training. So I went into the race wanting to do well, but mentally maybe not in the right spot. And that translated into me giving my special needs bag on the bike a little too late, and the bag never made the aid station on the bike. And another rookie mistake that I made was I relied too much on my special needs bag. And when I heard that they didn't have any, it completely messed me up. And I wasn't willing to adjust my behavior and take whatever was provided on the course, because I never trained with it, so I didn't know how my body was going to react, and it led to cramping on the bike. And at Whistler, I don't know if you know the course, but the last 25 miles are uphill. Cramped up on the bike and badly cramped up on the run to a point where my glutes starting to really tighten up and my back seized. I just couldn't move. So mile 12, I was sobbing, I was crying, it was miserable. Worst day of my life when it comes to triathlon, and I had to pull out of the race. And that night, after spending 2 hours with the medics, I felt good. And I was like, how can I go from being so miserable physically to being okay? And my wife, mentioned, Coeur d'Alene is a month out from now. So, it's a possibility if you want to try to make Kona again. So I thought about the race, of course, when she mentioned that. And 3 days later, I signed up for the race. And I went into the training block, the very short training block, and into the race with a completely different mindset. I was maybe too focused on getting the Kona slot. Going to Whistler, and I wanted to go to Coeur d'Alene, still thinking about Kona, trying to qualify for Kona, but most importantly, going there, having fun. Reconnecting was, joy of swimming, biking, running, regardless of what the race was going to throw at me. And it wasn't a perfect race by any means, at least not what I had in mind, but I was able to get out of T2 with a smile on my face. And I told myself, whatever happens, you smile running out of T2. And just seeing people cheering me on, seeing that I was, having a time and a smile on my face, I felt like the crowd was a little louder when they saw me coming out of T2. And it just gave me a little boost of energy. And it was like, oh, this is cool. And Coeur d'Alene is such a beautiful venue that a lot of people running through the neighborhood, people were telling me you're running stronger, faster, so that gave me a boost as well. But yeah, rolling with the punches, to answer your question, is I think that's the biggest lesson that Ironman taught me is there's so many things out of your control. Just you being able to deal with it is probably key.
Yeah, and you talk about the perfect race. I don't know if there's such a thing because of how long the race is, that there's always going to be something that can go wrong and will go wrong. And like you say, just roll with the punches. You've got to have a plan B. If plan B is not working, go to plan C. I think that's what I love about the sport as well. And I think that's what the thing is that keeps us coming back for more, is because we never quite dial it in exactly the way we want it. And I think that's probably one of the big attractions to the sport. Kevin, it's been great catching up. I want to chat about your swim, bike, and run next time out, but we'll save that for another day. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today.
Sounds good. Thank you very much, Brad. Have a good one.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Kona Edge. I look forward to catching up with you again in the next one. From myself, Brad Brown, make sure you keep listening. We've got some cool announcements coming up here on the podcast. We've got some cool stuff to give away, so make sure you stay with us. You could be a winner. That's all coming up in the next few days, so make sure you stick around. Until next time, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.